Chapter 1. The Institute of Psychic Research, London, England, 1987.
"I have no idea why you get so adamant about this, Dr. Toba,"
says a tall, thin woman wearing a white lab coat and a conservative gray pinstriped skirt with matching expensive pumps. Arms loosely crossed, lips pursed, she's peering down at the man who has large, soft brown eyes, made larger by the Coke bottle lenses of his glasses.
"As I've told you before, Dr. Burns,"
the older doctor impatiently explains,
"having several psychic abilities is theoretical. We've never found clinical evidence a person can have more than one paranormal ability, and the few we've found with only one ability are sad specimens indeed."
"Commander Toby seems perfectly satisfied with results from Williams and Havelson,"
the lady says with a trace of annoyance in her soft, cultured voice. She's toying with a man's gold wedding band, threaded on a gold necklace around her neck.
"And after all, he's in charge of the Institute, sir."
"Yes, quite right, Doctor, as he's so fond of reminding me."
Adjusting his glasses, he picks up some reports and heads towards the door.
"Should anyone need me, I'll be in my office."
With a heavy sigh, Dr. Burns strides stiffly to her workstation and sits, crossing her long, thoroughbred legs. Picking up a gold-plated pen with well-manicured soft pink fingernails, she starts doodling on a yellow legal pad. Another voice quietly reprimands her from the far corner of the room.
"Ruth, you shouldn't keep reminding Dr. Toba about Commander Doby. You know how upset he becomes about bureaucrats and their paperwork."
This man is short and round, also wearing a white lab coat that makes him resemble a giant cotton ball. He has curly blonde hair and sparkling periwinkle eyes. Waddling to her workstation, he continues,
"I can understand your place here, the pressure of trying to find the perfect specimen, when we very well know such people truly were alive. We'd never know their existence."
"Yes, Gordy," she agrees with a soft, dejected sigh. "And any person we did find would have so much psychic power, he couldn't possibly be controlled. Not by us, anyway."
For the past half hour, I've been hanging around, invisible, eavesdropping on the doctors. I call this trick my almost mode. Learning this ability took weeks of practice and resulted in some embarrassing moments. It's surprising what happens when a person materializes among a group of people. I've caused ear-screeching screams to drop-dead faints, and a few times, even mild coronaries. Then there are people who wet themselves over the least provocation.
"Do you feel as though we're wasting our time here?"
She's still doodling on the yellow legal pad, looking as if she lost her best friend.
"If I'd felt like that, I'd have left the Institute years ago,"
Gordy says, leaning one round buttock against her tabletop.
"Think of the specimens we found so far, not just Williams and Havelson, but the others who showed one type of phenomena or another." "I know, but each year it's harder to obtain funding. And after 12 years, all I have to show for our research is several hundred miles of computer tapes."
With a slight, elegant shrug, she adds,
"Oh, and a few tons of paperwork, in boxes no one cares about. Our lack of results is rather depressing sometimes."
Waddling to a cabinet, her lab partner pulls out a folder.
"I remember a few years ago, a young woman very excited about this man."
He plops the manila folder on the table in front of her.
"But I was only 22, she explains, ignoring the closed folder. "And Yuri was my first contact with the phenomena."
"Yes, but certainly not your last," he replies, laying a comforting hand on her shoulder. Ruth glances up at Gordy with a thoughtful frown.
"Do you think it's possible for a person to have more than one psychic ability?"
Picking up the ignored file with stubby fingers, he slides it back into the drawer.
"Do you remember Mrs. Holmquist?"
Twirling the wedding band on her necklace, his unhappy co-worker reluctantly nods.
"Then you should remember, for a brief span, how many psychic tendencies she exhibited."
With a sigh of exasperation, she rises from her chair, glides gracefully to a hot plate, and pours steaming water into a monogram mug, then adds a teabag and sugar. Talking over her shoulder, she disputes,
"Yes, Gordy, but she was a fluke, and you know it.
Call her what you will, Ruth. But for 3 weeks, we had our hands full with that woman,"
Gordy reminds her, following her to the hot plate.
"I remember, I still have the paperwork."
She takes her steaming mug and returns to her workstation, trailing behind her a faint scent of herbal tea.
"But if she didn't have the automobile accident, she never would have shown any of them,"
Ruth points out.
"Uh-huh, but we don't know that for certain. She may have done some of her tricks for years and never noticed."
He pours hot water into a bright yellow mug.
"How can someone do everything Mrs. Holmquist did and never noticed?"
She gives a slight shrug as she swirls the tea bag in her cup. He pours a generous amount of sugar into his hot water and stirs, but no tea bag.
The same way you aren't noticing what you're doing with your spoon.
Gordy nods towards her mug. Moving over a few paces to see what the doctor's doing, she glances directly at where I stand, a funny look on her face. She has the spoon balanced on the edge of her mug.
Oh, this is nothing, she dismisses with an elegant wave of her hand. It's only an idle habit of mine.
Precisely, Ruth. Just as Mrs. Holmquist may have telekinetically opened and closed doors for years, never paying any attention to what she was doing. If a habit feels natural and done frequently, we take it for granted, more often than not.
Yes, I understand what you're saying, Ruth argues, but that doesn't explain how she could move things, start fires, even go to sleep in one place and wake up in another. Sometimes so far away the journey would have been physically impossible to make in the time allowed.
She removes the teabag, dropping it into the wastebasket next to her workstation.
Yes, but all Mrs. Holmquist's psychic abilities occurred after her concussion from her auto accident.
Gordy patiently reminds her.
Then after 3 weeks, completely stopped.
He waddles back to his corner with his steaming mug of sugar water.
So, what are you saying, as if I didn't already know?
Ruth says, rolling her eyes.
I'm afraid I side with Dr. Tober on this subject. I think we have the latent tendencies in us. Maybe not every person, but certainly many of us. And with the right stimulation, they manifest themselves.
With pressed lips, Ruth toys with her spoon. Dr. Gordy continues.
And I feel strongly, as Dr. Tober does, that somewhere there's at least one person who has these and other traits of the phenomena. Some abilities we may not be aware of yet.
Right on, Doctor, I think. My psychic abilities are part of the reason I'm here. I can do so many things, and this is the place to show off my talents. The Institute of Psychic Research, London, England. I mentally concentrate on Dr. Tober's office, and blip, I teleport to the location. He's reading some reports. Papers strewn across his desk, unaware of my presence, though I'm no longer in my almost mode. He finally glances up at me, his eyes growing bigger. Then, in an instant, he's under control. I guess working at the Institute would condition you to the unexpected. Clearing his throat, he asks,
Who are you, and why are you in my office?
He peers around me, trying to see whether one of the doctors had ushered me into his office. Excuse me for dropping in, Doctor, but I'm the man who called you the other day.
The American, huh? Mr. Merlin?
He politely inquires. That's right, Doctor. Arthur Merlin, late of the U.S. of A., I proudly announce with a flourish and a bow. He stares at me impassively, not at all impressed. He waves to a nearby chair.
Please, sir, be seated.
I sit in a chair designed to get you up and out of the room as quickly as possible. Apparently, lollygagging isn't allowed in Dr. Tober's office. Shuffling up the scattered papers, he places them in a file folder, sliding it to the right of his desk. Leaning forward with clasped hands, he asks,
I have the standard test to arrange. But why don't you start by telling me what abilities you're capable of performing that you think I might be interested in?
Okay, Doctor, it's been called the Geller Effect. But what he plays with, I do quite well, I brag. And there are other tricks I do he can't even pretend to do. Leaning back in his chair, Dr. Tober removes his glasses and tiredly rubs his big, round eyes.
Exactly what do you do, Arthur?
Stifling a yawn, he replaces his glasses. I sit there flummoxed. I don't understand why he isn't impressed. I'm exactly the person the doctors were discussing in the lab, but he doesn't seem at all interested. True, there can't be that many people, if any, who have all my abilities. I suppose Dr. Tober would have to be leery in his position. Who knows what kind of nutcases wander in off the street? I'll have to prove my uniqueness. Telekinesis, teleportation, pyrokinesis, astral projection, levitation in any form, I elaborate, ticking them off on my fingers. And any kind of matter transference, I doubt you've had any experience with.
Yes, Arthur. Well, perhaps you'd consent to a small, demonstration for me?
With an impatient frown, he starts fiddling with a pen on his desk. Certainly, Doctor. Eager to flaunt my talents, I shift in that unwelcoming chair, glancing around his office. Filing cabinets, a few pictures, and a dozen framed diplomas. Not much else. Ah, the wastebasket, full of crumpled up papers. Focusing my pyrokinesis ability on the wastebasket, the crumpled up papers burst into orange flames. Springing from his chair, Dr. Tober yells,
My God, man!
Relax, Doctor, I hastily assure him. I control the flames. I mentally shut down the fire, and it fizzles out with a whoomp. Simple, if you remove all the oxygen from that spot. but there had been some interesting episodes while mastering the trick. Once, I almost suffocated a room full of government scientists. I still get a chuckle over that one. The good doctor's plastered against his filing cabinet, eyes as round as the frame of his glasses, mouth hanging open. He doesn't look nearly as disinterested or skeptical now. Thick gray smoke drifts through his office, causing him to lean over, coughing. "I'll open a window, Dr. Tober," I offer gallantly, nodding towards the window. From his rumpled, brown suit jacket's breast pocket, he removes a white handkerchief, covering his nose and mouth. Big eyes blinking rapidly, he mumbles,
"The windows don't open above the second floor, and we're on the fifth floor."
I mentally focus on the window set into the wall behind his desk. Glass, thick, wire reinforced. The window begins to dissolve, allowing a stream of fresh air to flow inside. Jerking his head towards the window, he demands,
"What did you just do?"
"Relax. I dissolved the window into a screen. Don't worry, I'll change it back." With a self-satisfied smirk, I lean back, resting my left ankle on my right knee, trying to get comfortable in that torture device of a chair. Still staring bug-eyed at the window turned to screen, he picks up his phone, keeping his distance from me.
"Dr. Burns, grab Gordy and get in here, right now."
Judging by his reaction to my demonstration, he might not be as immune to the unexpected as I thought. Returning the handkerchief to his pocket, he gives me the look most people do when I've used my abilities they don't have, as if I'm a cockroach crawling across their hand. The door bursts open, and in rushes the tall woman from the lab, followed closely by the short, round, and now puffing man. She shoots me the same funny look she did earlier in the lab. With his underlings at hand, Dr. Tober returns to his chair, introducing us around. He gives a brief description of my demonstration. Dr. Gordy peers quizzically into the trash can at the smoldering embers, while Dr. Burns hesitantly glides to the window, gently touching the screen. She turns, staring at me with creased brows and fingering her necklace. Telepathically, I say to her, "No, Ruth, no hoax." She takes a step backwards, rubbing her forehead.
"Was that telepathy?"
she asks in amazement. "Yes," I answer, gazing back into her enchanting jade green orbs. With narrowed eyes at Ruth, Tober says,
"But I heard nothing, Gordy."
"No, sir, not a word," Gordy confirms, also staring at Ruth. Hands on hips, she states,
"Well, I did."
"Of course, Ruth," I tell her with a smirk. "I was only speaking to you." She starts toying with her necklace again, glancing from Dr. Tober to Dr. Gordy, and looking like a deer ready to bolt. "And I read your mind, Doctor," I say with a smug, arrogant smile, "and now I know everything about you, down to your smallest little secret." Telepathically, I say,
"Don't worry, Ruth. I won't discuss your sex life."
I give her a lewd wink. Her hand flies to her mouth, a bright blush spreading across her pale cheeks.
"Dr. Burns, are you all right?"
Dr. Tober asks, with concern.
"Yes, Dr. Tober, I'm fine,"
Ruth hisses through clenched teeth, trembling with indignation. Tober's analytical eyes and Gordy's puzzled ones bounce back and forth from Ruth to me. By her mannerisms and her speech, I can tell she's from an affluent background. She's fighting to maintain her composure. Aloud, I say soothingly,
"Relax, Doctor. Calm down."
Clearing his throat, Dr. Tober adjusts his glasses, reminding them,
"Mr. Merlin has come to the Institute so we can conduct some tests."
Periwinkle eyes sparkling with teenage boy's exuberance, Gordy says,
"I'd like to see the pyrotechnic demonstration again, sir. I'll gather more paper."
"No need, Doctor," I tell him. "I can burn the ashes for you." The trash can bursts into a ball of yellow flames, creating intense heat takes so little of my concentration. The doctor stare transfixed at the smokeless fire as I lean back with a satisfied smile. With a wrinkled brow, Gordy asks,
"Hypnosis?"
He holds his hand towards the fire.
"I can feel the heat," he explains.
Suddenly, the flames intensify, the fire growing to twice its size. Too close, Gordy's jacket catches fire, flames rising quickly.
"Ah!"
He screams, staring in shock at his flaming arm. My foot thumping to the floor, I jerk upright, mentally shutting down the fire with a whoomp. Gordy's skin is badly burned, the pain beginning to register. Telekinetically, I focus on his pain receptors, blocking his pain, and order Tober. "Better get him to the hospital. He sustained a second-degree burn." Tober is already on the phone, and seconds later, two men in lab coats rush through the door, into Dr. Gordon. I tell the two men he'll be pain-free for several hours, which should give you time to get him treated. Helping support Gordy, trying not to cause more harm to his injured arm, they slowly guide the frightened man out of the office.
I'm stunned. I rub my forehead, trying to figure out what happened. I didn't mean to hurt Dr. Gordon. Maybe I'd been showing off, but the fire shouldn't have leapt up like that. Once I mastered my abilities, I've had no trouble controlling them.
So why did I lose control now? In the doorway appear two men in uniforms, wearing guns. They're guards, or more likely, soldiers. The uniforms march to Tober's desk and stand at attention. Tober rises stiffly to his feet. Staring down at me, he declares,
I'm sorry, Arthur, but I'm afraid we'll have to detain you.
With military precision and steely eyes, the guards draw their weapons, pointing them at me. One guard holds a pair of handcuffs. Tober confidently continues,
We are primarily funded by our government, and I'm sure they'll want to question you at length. You seem to be just the man we've been searching for.
Staring into the dark barrels of the guards' weapons, with a wolfish grin, I slowly rise from the non-lollygagging chair and mentally focus on the guards. Their at-attention stances melt to loose-limb stances. With idiotic smiles, the two guards amble over, handing me their weapons and the cuffs. I holster their guns back on their belts, ordering them. Nice of you to stop by, men. Now please, go take a break.
Yes, sir.
They salute and do an about-face, marching out the door, with Tober yelling at them to return, to no avail. With that deer-in-the-headlight look again, Dr. Burns asks in a quivering voice, Was that a form of hypnosis? Being a bit peeved, I give her a curt nod and an icy glare. Realization dawns on Tober and Ruth. I could have made the guards turn their weapons on themselves, or the doctors. Tober pales and plops bonelessly on his plush office chair. Gathering his wits, Tober stammers,
You must realize, Arthur, I meant you no harm. But you're a very valuable asset to us in our research.
With indignation, I glare down at him. Doctor, I came to your institute for several reasons. First, I thought your team would treat me differently and take my abilities seriously. You can't detain me or hold me for 1 second longer than I want. Shaking my head at his stupidity, I continue. Don't you realize how I arrived at your office? After listening to your conversation in the lab, I teleported into your office.
But there were only Dr. Burns and Dr. Gordon when I left.
Tober blusters, fumbling for his handkerchief. Oh yes, there were, Doctor, I taunt, wagging my finger at him. I was there. You just couldn't see me. Nervously shifting from foot to foot, twisting a woman's wedding band on her right hand, Dr. Burns sends me that peculiar look again. Peering down my nose, with an angry glare, I say, Yes, Dr. Burns, you must have felt my presence. With handkerchief in hand, Dr. Tober removes his glasses, wiping his enlarged eyes again. I continue my lecture. If I work for or with any institution or government, it's because I want to. No one can force me to do a damn thing. I'd expected this type of treatment, but it's still disappointing. They want to treat me like a lab rat. So much for believing in humanity of man. Tober studies me for several seconds, calculating, then hesitantly asks,
Arthur, could you please excuse us for a few moments? I must discuss this with Dr. Burns in private. We have a cafeteria on the second floor. Perhaps you'd have a spot of tea while you wait.
With a heavy sigh, I ask, Where out on the second floor? I know I need to give them a second chance.
The whole east side of the building.
Trying to impress on the doctors their inability to detain me, I give them one last piercing glare, then teleport to the second floor, into the stairwell outside the cafeteria. As I enter the cafeteria, I see my two guards sharing a table. They give me the same idiotic smiles and wave. With an acknowledging nod, I order a cup of really bad-looking coffee and sit alone, waiting.